Think you know the Brooks Ghost? Think again. Introducing the all-new, better-than-ever Ghost 16. Now with nitrogen-infused cushioning for lightweight, supreme softness that feels good every step, every street, every single day. So go ahead, take your daily joyride in the all-new nitrogen-infused Ghost 16. It'll turn your everyday miles into everyday endorphins. Let's run there. Head to brooksrunning.com to learn more.
I never put much thought into tires in the past. The thought was always to drive what comes on my vehicle, and if I had to replace them, I made my decision based on price. Our friends at Cooper Tires know what they're talking about. Cooper has been an American company since 1914, with more than a century in the tire industry. Each Cooper Tire undergoes rigorous testing and are backed by warranty, so you can trust that they'll last for thousands of miles. The Coopers pride themselves on good merchandise, fair play, and a square deal. Always have and always will. Don't overpay or underbuy. Cooper Tires do what tires should do and cost what tires should cost. All Cooper Tires are backed by a limited warranty, a 45-day test drive warranty, and select products are backed by tread wear mileage warranty, helping to give you confidence on the road. For complete product and warranty details, please visit www.coopertires.com or www.coopertires.ca. And remember, go with the Coopers.
Hello, back for Crash Course. This time we're going to Ohio. I'm joined by my brother Neil. Neil, how are we?
John, I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. This is a treat. One of my first Donald Ross course I ever played, Springfield Country Club.
We're going back to Ohio. I think all roads lead to Ohio and specifically Springfield, Ohio. I have multiple stories of being all over the world and you meet somebody from Springfield. It just feels like it... I'm sure a lot of people feel that way about different small towns, but Springfield, Ohio feels like the center of the maze sometimes.
Yeah, for those of you that don't know where Springfield is, it's located between Columbus and Dayton along the I-70 corridor. It used to be the national road going through there. So you had, you know, Zanesville, Columbus, Springfield, Dayton, Richmond, Indiana, Indianapolis. You know, Ross spent some time in Columbus, spent some time kind of all along there, making his way west. And actually our mom grew up there, Peggy.
Shout out to Peggy.
Peggy Kunk, maiden name Kunk.
What is she, the fourth of six children?
Yes.
To Gene and Eddie Kunk. And our grandfather was the mayor of Springfield.
Back in the mid-80s, I think.
I think, yeah, like 82 to 86.
Something like that.
And so we have a lot of memories of going to Springfield. This was a nostalgic trip for me. I haven't been to Springfield since 2013. Unfortunately, the last two times I've been there was for a funeral. And there's just not, to be honest, there's not a ton going on in Springfield, Ohio.
There's not.
Right?
There's not. I think there's more going on. People are kind of moving back out of big cities back into some of these small towns now that they can work remotely and all that. So Springfield's home of Wittenberg University.
It is.
They've got, I know they used to, I don't know if they still do, big International Harvester.
I feel like they shut down, didn't they? Wasn't that like
I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of one of those, you know.
Let me look.
It's a mix of Central Ohio industry and farming, but not really deep enough into either, right?
Yeah.
There was a box company that was based there for a long time.
I'm seeing International Harvester Credit Union is the only thing in Springfield now. So I feel like similar to a lot of other Rust Belt towns in and around Ohio, you know, it feels like its best days are behind it, but maybe not. Maybe you're right. Maybe people are coming back. I will say this. When we showed up, I was impressed at the club is – it's nothing flashy when you drive in, but the place was popping. There was plenty of people at the pool. They had a massive junior clinic going on out on the range, and the course was in perfect shape. So yeah. I think my first impression after I think I'd been there 15 years ago was it was delightful. You know, a word we use a lot, but one I truly mean with Springfield.
I'd been back a few times in the last decade or so to play Springfield. And then actually I went to U.S. Open sectionals there 1 year. And it's the same guys that, like, they have U.S. Open sectionals there every year. I don't know why more PGA Tour guys don't go over there versus playing it, playing the 36-hole slog at the Lakes and Brookside over in. I know there's more spots up for grabs over there, but you've got, you know, half the tour over in Columbus after the Memorial versus you've got just, you know, I think it's up to 7 spots now in Springfield. It used to only be 3 or 4. Zach Blair always tries there. Brian Stewart is always there. Troy Merritt. If you're a relatively straight hitter and can putt, but they get that place dialed. There's only 2 pins on some of those holes. Like, there's only 2 or 3 hole locations because the greens are unequivocally the defense of the golf course.
I think Tony Finau qualified long ago over at Springfield Country Club.
He did. But yeah, I think kind of before we get started, Chad Durrell, I think he's the superintendent. He's been there a while. Few other clubs have come calling, and he's, you know, happy there and doing an absolutely wonderful job. So, playing conditions, playing surfaces are totally up to snuff, especially for a place that probably doesn't have as large of a budget as many of its peers in Ohio. And then Jake Houston, he's the head pro out there, doing a fantastic job as well. Massive junior clinic on the range when we were out there. Great practice facility, by the way. They've got
good range.
You know, it's nothing flashy. I think that's kind of the thing with Springfield. Like, it's nothing flashy, but it's just so solid and substantive. And it's like an original Donald Ross course that they haven't messed with over the years. It's still the same as it was when, and Ross designed a lot of courses. He didn't always step foot on all those properties. He did it via topo maps. I think he stepped foot at Springfield and did, you know, a lot of it is his handiwork.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the range is kind of back in the corner. You got to drive out there from the clubhouse, and super flat, double-sided range, just really, really like utilitarian.
Felt like a grinder's paradise.
I could have spent all day out there.
Yeah, nobody was going to bug you. The range is dead flat, so you're not really guessing about how far your clubs are going. You can see every target.
Yeah.
It's very simple, very useful. And shout out to the superintendent, Chad. Following him on Twitter.
Yeah,
recently.
Great Twitter follow.
Yeah. You know, I kind of like, you know, how stuff works type vibe. And he's putting out a lot of good content around what they're up to on the course and you know, what they're fixing, what they're working on. So
some of that too is
superintendent Twitter is pretty good.
Yeah.
You know, shout out to Randy.
And Ohio does a very good job. They've got the Golf Course Superintendent Association of Ohio. They've got a great YouTube channel. They got all sorts of good stuff. Cause I think some of it too, for especially in some of these small towns is, you've got, or smaller towns. I mean, Springfield's city of what, probably 30,000-40,000 people. Now.
I mean, look, we should know more about it. I almost feel a little sheepish. Just cause like we have roots there and I felt like I was assuming.
I love going.
When I got there and then I left, I was like, God, it's great to be back in Springfield, Ohio, you know, but it's just not a place that is, I'm not passing through it very often.
But I think as they, you know, as they kind of cater to a younger demographic, you know, try to grow the membership at places like this.
Well, it's the best like young membership in the state, right?
It's crazy.
Like if you're outside of 30 miles, like
40 miles.
40, yeah. Yeah. So a lot of folks from Columbus, if you know, you can make the drive over in an hour. Population of Springfield, 59,000, 132 as of 2019.
So, but I think it's incumbent upon superintendent and head pro, director of golf, to educate, you know, the membership, especially if it's skewing younger and if a lot of people haven't blown into country club before or something like that, to, you know, educate them about what you're doing with the playing surfaces and what the maintenance routines look like, when is aeration, all that stuff. I feel like you know, you really give people a way to buy in on their home turf.
Sure.
But yeah, the course is, I mean, it's infamous for the greens.
Yes.
And you get a taste of that on the first hole. It's a kind of a straightaway par 4. You know, super old school where you've got the, you know, one and 10 right there next to each other,
up
off the
on
back
this,
of the clubhouse.
Like up on a hill too. So the clubhouse sits up top, kind of highest point of the property, and then both tees, you're going out,
yeah,
kind of hitting over, I don't want to say a ravine, but the, you know,
it's the swale,
yeah, it moves down and then both kind of go up over this hill, and so you don't really know what's, you know, what's out there. It's kind of like, yeah, just blast it over that hill and keep it between these two sets of trees. And then we'll go find it.
Yeah, and then 9 and 18. 9 comes up on the left side of 1, and 18 comes up on the right side of 10. But yeah, 1, we're standing there on the first tee, and guys were playing with said, hey, there's, you know, it's a front right pin today. And I said, oh, great. You know, they said, no, like that's not the pin you want. It's a very difficult back to front slope green. And I think a good result on that pin was 3-putting.
I hit my approach to 5 feet, slightly above the hole, and I missed that putt and had a 12-foot par putt from the fringe. And I made that. So I started with a par.
I hit one a little long left. I was trying to leave it short right. Left. I was like 15 feet above the hole. I got one down to probably 6 feet past, somehow stopped, missed that, and then had a tricky sidewinder coming back from my 3-putt that lipped in.
And we should mention it was a bit of a family reunion for the boys here. So shout out to Dave Shovlin, old friend of our Uncle Pete. Our Uncle Tom was out there. We had our mom's cousins, the Griffith brothers, were out there. And then, of course, from Trap Draw fame, the legendary R.C. Kunk, Uncle Pete's son, Tron and I's cousin.
And the last time I was out there with R.C.,
he made an albatross. That's right. On what, 12?
No, on the second hole.
On number two?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. With his tight lies.
Yeah, with his Adam's tight lies.
So we had a group of eight, and everybody 3-putted or 4-putted the first hole in my group. Tron, you were playing ahead of me. It sounds like everybody did that too.
Yeah, it's truly just a test of like you kind of have to throw. That's why U.S. Open sectionals is so fascinating out there, because you got these guys that, like, you know, some of them are kind of unsuspecting, right?
And
you know, it gets a little bit like two is a little bit more benign green. Two is a par five. I imagine they either play two or five. I would imagine two as a par four, probably during U.S. Open sectionals. It's like 510 yards. There's a lot of cross bunkering, right? Like a, you know, something up the right or up the left, about 100 yards out, to where even on some of the longer par fours, to where Ross is just kind of messing with your eye more than anything.
And not only cross bunkers for sure, but I noticed on five specifically, 4 and 5, I really like both those holes. Creeks are kind of just like dry creek beds maybe sometimes, and then little trenches and the little mounds in front of the green.
Yeah, or a little pushed up green.
Yeah, to prevent the run-up shot. You know, kind of the fairway doesn't always run into the green, which I really liked. I thought there was some good use of I guess, mounding to be hazards in a way, which I thought was good.
Yeah. Two's got that a little bit, and then three, there's a front bunker that's set way off the green that makes it look like just messes with your eye. It's probably 30 yards off the green, but it makes it look like, you know, it just obscures your eye. And they've done a really good job on some of the tops of the bunkers of leaving some kind of hairy, you know, scraggly eyelashes up there to really add some texture.
And that worked on me because in my quest not to airmail greens, I think I shot the front bunker and thought, oh, that's the front of the green. I ended up, you know, I was chipping. So we did not get up and down there.
So I think the course for me really gets started on number four.
Yeah.
Four is 440 yard par four. Flat drive, and then it rises to this green that's kind of benched into this hill. And
it's got to be at least 30, 40 feet up.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I mean, it's a serious climb. And like you said about the drive, unnervingly straight.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like that and number five, the next hole, it's like you got to hit the ball. And six, it's like three in a row of like, hey, you know, reminds me of number seven at Pasatiempo. You know, when the trees are on both sides.
But that's not a good hole, whereas this is, I think, a really, really good
I think that's a sick hole. So we're going to disagree on that.
But four, it was like a front leftish pin. I landed it pin high, spun it back off the green, and it rolled 40 feet down. And then I putted it up twice. It rolled back to my feet, and I finally got it back up on the green. And like the last time I played there, I had I had a birdie putt on that hole that I was I was facing 180 degrees away from the hole on the putt, and it totally horseshoed, and like my heels were pointing to the hole, basically.
I think I had a great drive, also came up short by a couple yards, rolled back. I did get up and down, but I thought that was a good indicator of I didn't want to club up because the pin was up, and if I knew if I was long of that pin, then I'm putting off the green anyway. So it just was like a can't-win situation there. It's like hitting the green may not have been a reward. I may have ended up playing it.
It's not enough. It's kind of a two-tier green. It's not super. It's not unfair. It's just,
but if you're on that top tier exacting. And you're trying to get down to that front hole, like I was trying all day. I took the advice of everybody I talked to. Just don't be above the hole, which you could say about any course, but this one specifically. And but
and
there's
it shows
a good,
you that very quickly on yeah. one and four and one, four, six, where you know, yeah, just don't
but be the above combination the hole. Of not have you're exactly right about exacting. There you go. You can't be above the hole, but there's a lot of these holes have false fronts, you know, or there's a punishment for coming up short. So you better be dialed. And it's hard to be dialed when you're hitting up to a green. It's hard to club up when you know you don't want to be beyond the hole and you're hitting to a green that's 40 feet, 50 feet yeah. above you, right? Yeah. It's just like it's a mind fuck, basically.
I'm not sure if it's 50 feet above. It's like... It's a good 30, 35 feet.
Okay.
I think.
But I thought it was significant because I
yeah,
ended up walking up there. And I was
because
like,
you're coming
is...
from a flat part of the property.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, there's like a creek that kind of runs across as well. And then, yeah, five's the one you said. Five's a tricky little driving hole too because you can't really tell how far those fairway bunkers are out there. Six is one of the best holes on the course, in my opinion. Straight away par four.
With the creek crossing
creek
in front,
right in front of the green, and then some of the gnarliest fall offs, back left, back right of you know just pushed up green a little bit in the back, and that's one that you can tell that they've pushed the green back out to
yeah kind of where I thought it was almost squared off
yeah
I really liked the way that green looked and
it was a back left pin I missed left. I had a shitty drive and like I just had to punch one up. Missed left and like on my next chip, I just like I struggled to keep the ball on the green and I had 60 feet of green to work with, like, you know, past the pin. And the greens were rolling at 10 and a half and like they could dial them up to, you know, they'd gotten some rain. They could dial them up to 12 and it would be damn near unplayable.
And I think they have to. You know, when the pros come to town, because it's just not a very big piece of property. But my favorite hole was, or two favorite holes are 7 and 8.
7 and 8 are great. It's kind of playing back. It's the high point, kind of the high point of the front nine. 7's a cool drive, and then you know, really similar thing. You got an elevated green, pretty exacting second shot. This one's you got a much shorter club in your hands than on 4.
They both. Goad you into hitting driver when you shouldn't.
yeah, I mean, I don't think you need a drive. Yeah,
you don't need a driver on either
of them. But you see the scorecard length, and like on 7, it's 352, 8's 330. You know, 7's pretty clearly like it's probably a 4 iron off the tee, 5 iron off the tee. And then, you know, 8 is 8. 8, you could probably hit driver and get it up there. There's a cross bunker of, 40 yards out
great.
From the green, and it's kind of a heaving diagonal across the across this hillside. And then a wild, wild green.
Yeah, it's like an infinity
split
green.
Split-level infinity green that's...
With nothing behind it except like looking down at 9 green and just basically a wall of rough that falls off the back. But on 8, I hit driver, hit like a second serve cut. It was a great shot, right? And I saw the shot. I hit the shot. I executed. I had like 60 yards in. And just, you know, a little too much with the wedge. I was in a little bit of rough. Wedge is long. And then I putted it, you know, from back to front, like pretty much. I didn't completely degreen myself, but you can't keep the ball within 15 feet if you're above the hole, right?
It's so, a, it's a, It's a test of accuracy and discipline the entire day.
Yeah, but I like the combination. It made me think about the combination of a short par four, but uphill. I don't know. It might seem random to bring that up now, but I just thought that the making them both uphill.
Well, it's a two shot. It's a two shot par four, right? Yeah. It's a two shot short par four, which I think is one of the more interesting kinds of holes in all of golf, right? And I think there's but at no point does the course ever feel like, yeah, if you hit it in the wrong spots, or maybe on one, if you hit the middle of the green and then you're four putting, yeah, that one feels unfair. But at no point anywhere else does it feel like you are being unfairly punished. It feels like, no, like, just don't fucking hit it there, right? Yeah. Like you made a mistake. You went after this pin and didn't execute. You can go at middle of the greens and you're probably going to have some three putts, but it's not like, it's not going to beat you up off the tee. If you take your medicine and try not to be a hero, like, you can make a lot of easy pars or hard pars, easy bogeys out there all day long. It's when you start trying to force the issue and make birdies. And then nine's this little pocket par three down the hill back towards the clubhouse. Got like five or six bunkers there. And it's so far downhill. It's a really tough hole to figure out the distance on.
Yeah, I ended up in the front bunker. And the wind is a factor there. That's a testy little shot. The other thing, you're right about staying patient.
Because there's scoring holes out there.
Like a couple holes I hit driver and you're like, oh my God, I'm up, like seven's a perfect example. I'm 50 yards away, but I'm on the wrong side of the fairway and I don't realize that till after.
It's like, I'd rather be 170 yards away.
Yeah, it's almost like you don't realize you're in danger until you're already like in a chokehold and you're like, oh my God, no, I can't get the ball close here. And then that's when you force it. You're like, well, I'm going to try to hit this, wedge shot that I don't practice, a high floater, and then that's long, and now I'm three putting for bogey.
And the conditioning's good enough to where, if you're hitting from above the hole onto a downslope, the ball's not going to stop,
No, it's not. So, but it kind of lulls you into there's plenty of room up there. Like, you should, it's not like, you don't feel like it's a very tight course. Maybe OB on 7 and 8, sure, but elsewhere, you can blow it around.
You can driver if you want to. It's just a matter of, I don't think you want to.
Yeah, but it's not just hit it as close to the green as possible. Like, you got to be on the right side. If you're going to be close to the green, you better be on the right side of the hole, or else you're if you're in the rough, you're asking for trouble on the wrong side of the hole.
And then kind of, making the turn there, 10's pretty similar to 1, 393, a little bit shorter, a little bit more cant in that fairway, and then more bunkers up by the green as well. Or, I'm sorry. Ten. Yeah, they're very, very similar holes. There's a creek that runs kind of down that right side there that everything kind of funnels towards. And then 11, 373, probably one of the more straightforward holes on the golf course.
Yeah, I think 11 and 14 were both pretty straightforward.
Yeah, there's par fours. Good green up there, but very straight off the tee. Fairway bunker up the left isn't really in play. It's more about the trees that kind of pinch in up the left. And then 12 is like, it looks super benign from the tee. It's a par five. It's 478 from the tips, I think. And your eyes get big and you're trying to think, all right, I'm going to make a three or a four here. And I had 165 yards out for my second shot. I made double.
You leave it above the hole?
I left it above the hole. And then, I left one short because I was so afraid to be above the hole. Then I chipped up above the hole, and then I think I three-putted. I four-putted.
I got one up close to the green and chipped it to about 6 feet above the hole, 6 foot downhill birdie putt, and I made that one. It ran into the hole, and everybody was like,
it would have been off the green.
100%. Right? But I was kind of like, you know what? I'm going to just trust this line. And that was because you actually rolled by in the cart and were like, let me know how that putt goes. And I was like, okay. And so I that was the one I made. But you could see the way that green, actually I think between 6 and the next hole, 13, the par 3, those are my two favorite greens. Both of them really
13's big. 13's Willy 13
Wonka is outrageous. just canting.
But it's not unfair, I don't think.
No, it goes big, like top left to bottom right, sloping. and you can almost get a sense of it from the tee, and then you get up there, like, oh my God, you know, like our Uncle Tom was above the hole there. He actually hit a great putt to, I think, probably got it to like 8 feet, but it was,
it and just, it's elevated enough too to where like you got to get the ball up there. I was short left and hit this, probably the best shot I hit all day.
I had the same chip.
This chip, and you know,
with that bunker in front of you.
I was aiming 90 degrees, you know, straight ahead, and the pin was up to the right.
Yeah.
It was wild.
But that putt that our uncle hit, it took about 10 minutes to get to the hole, you know, because he had to tap it, and it just
keeps rolling out.
Like, just, I mean, truly probably 20 seconds
it's
for
like,
the ball
it's
to
playing
finish
golf with your mind,
yeah,
right? And then you've got to execute the shots, but you got to figure out on the second, it's a second shot golf course. You got to put yourself in position off the tee, but second shots, you got to figure out, all right, like, how do I want to play this shot? Where do I want to be on my next shot? Right. There's a lot of scar tissue it builds up, I think.
Yeah.
And then I like 14 a lot. 14 is another like kind of shortish par four. It's only 345, 350.
That's the one I made a mess on, where I hit a great drive and had about 30 yards in, but I was on the left side. The pin was on the left, and
you put it in one of those bunkers. Like, there's bunkers surrounding this entire.
Yeah, and the pin was back left. So then I tried to hit a flop shot because you're saying to yourself, "Yo, I'm 30 yards away. I gotta go to the green. I should just hit it. I should have just chipped it to the middle of the green, taken my par, and said, I'm on the wrong side of the hole. I waving the right flag. Instead, I tried to get greedy, ended up putting a, you know, extended flop shot in the back bunker, and then you're dead. You're totally dead. So that's where it really felt like you don't know you're dead until you're already, like, you know,
that hole is put in submission. That hole's very like, I'd much rather have 120 yards in a gap wedge or pitching wedge in my hand than 60 yards in an awkward, you know, awkward half shot.
Yeah, right? And the bunkering there was good. It's actually a inviting run up to the green, but then these long bunkers frame both sides of the hole, I think.
There's two bunkers in front too.
Are there?
Yeah.
Okay. So that whole green's covered in bunkers.
Yeah.
Then.
I mean,
okay.
That's a short but demanding.
Yeah, that's one. Okay. I must mix that up with.
You're thinking of 17. 17 is okay. Open in front. And then 15's kind of up this hill to really, really cool green. There's no bunkers up on that green.
A punch bowl there.
Yeah, yeah. It's you can use the slopes long and right there, but you got to hit the proper shot because you can't just throw it up there mindlessly, and you know, otherwise it's not going to come down in the right area.
I think that was my favorite piece of the property vibe wise is the almost layered like visual of 13 green. 15 green, and then 16's back in that little pocket, and then 17 tee is all kind of right there.
And then you can see 18 green in the clubhouse beyond too. Yeah, and then cool little par three. I mean, kind of hesitate to say little. It's 190 yards.
Yeah, that was a pretty
par three,
pretty
16.
Big hole.
You know, just, and there's a relatively new bunker there. I guess Shovlin was on the greens committee and asked them to put that in there. It used to be just this grass bunker that was tough to cut and crappy grass down there.
The
and they put the front right bunker.
Front right bunker.
Yeah. And another good green there. And then, yes.
I would like to say I made about a 60-foot putt from the fringe for par on that hole. I missed long, was totally boned, chipped it to the front of the green, and just kind of one of those step up and whack it. So I was kind of like, man, I stink. And it went in. It was great. That got me back. That brought me back from the butthurt nation.
And there's some cool, like, stately old houses over on that side of the course too. Like, it's kind of walking back in time a little bit. And then 17, I think 17 is the best driving hole in the course.
I had that in my notes too. I think that blind tee shot just.
Yeah. Kind of down through this chute. There's, you know, two big slopes on either side that you know, kind of weave diagonal and then shoot you out into this fairway. Yeah, it's like after you play it, you're like, oh, that's a lot more straightforward than I thought it was. But, you know, really, really good hole. Open in front of the green. Like you said, it's a 580-yard par five, and you know, just a really, really stout, strong,
yeah, just
17th
kind of gradually dog-legging left with trees up the left side, but pretty open off the tee. If you get it through that chute,
yeah,
you can kind of miss either way. I actually hit an 18 fairway.
That was a provocative line.
It was. I didn't intend for that to happen, of course. Yeah, but I like 17 was a fun hole. That was a good looking hole and a fun tee shot.
And then 18's back up to, you know, tee off in the low part, goes back up, elevated green, uphill par four, up towards the clubhouse, up to where 17 tee was. And, you know, pretty mega false front tee on that green. It's, you know.
The only lake out there, too.
The lake's on the right, yeah.
On the right?
Yeah, on the right of 10 and on the right of 18, kind of between those two. But yeah, there's a bunker up the right that kind of grabs your eye. There's no reason to be in that. And then you probably have 130 to 150 yard shot in there to elevated green, and you got to get it up there. Otherwise you're spinning it back down. And then, like that's another pin where if the pin is in, or green, where if the pin is in the front, you can, you know, you can
de-green.
You could potentially de-green and be 40, 50 yards off the front there.
Yeah.
So like, it's just one of those courses. It was the first Ross course I ever played. I didn't even know who Donald Ross was. I just remember went out there with our grandpa when I was maybe, I don't know, 9 or 10, kind of just getting into golf but like hitting it pretty well, like starting to get things. Maybe I was even a little bit older than that. And I remember I really, really liked it, but I didn't know why or what was going on. I just knew it was different than anything else I'd ever played.
Yeah.
Right? So it's always left this indelible mark on me of, you know, I just like it's just everything I think of when I think of Donald Ross.
Donnie's always got a knack for finding those pockets to put like greens up in like little nooks and crannies of a hill. And
yeah,
it just makes for interesting approaches. And you know, if you miss, very penal.
If
you're rolling back to your feet kind of stuff.
At where like on 15 green or 13 or number 8, like there's some holes out there that like it doesn't make a whole lot of, like you're like, oh man, like that took some ingenuity to put
he found this piece of land, this hill, and he's like, this is perfect for a green. And he's like, no, I'm gonna put three different greens into the same hill, you know, in different ways. Like,
yeah,
I'm gonna route this course so that we can keep kind of putting greens into these pockets. And it's really cool to see. Yeah, if you stop and think about it, like most people probably only put one green into that hill and then move on.
I don't think I've ever been to a course that uses the land it has as, like, there's not a wasted spot on that whole property. There's no, like, it fits together like a jigsaw puzzle. The front nine is back and forth, but at no point does it feel back and forth at all, because you've got those holes like 7, 8, 9. And then the back is a little bit back and forth, but going the opposite direction, going more east-west. But then you've got the holes like 13 and 15 and 17 that kind of,
yeah,
trick you into thinking you're not going back and forth the same direction.
You could argue that like 4, 5, and 6, they are back and forth. They're switching back on each other, but each hole has its own unique,
yeah,
feature where like, oh man, that's like, you know, that's a problem for me, or that's interesting. I need to, like, my mind is occupied either with the elevation change, you know, some mounding stuff, the creek, the way the green is massive and sloping. So, yeah, all three of those holes are awesome, even though, like, the layout, like, if you look at it, it's very simple.
Even the fairway bunker, like, some of the fairway bunkers, they're not even in play for people anymore, but they give you something to look at. They'll mess with your eye, or they give you something to look at and think about. So, I don't know. I relish every chance I get to go back to that place. It's just a total throwback. They don't make them like that anymore. And if they did, the architect would probably be, you know, bullied into oblivion.
So what'd you shoot?
What did I shoot? I think I shot like 80, 82 or 83. I had it rolling for, I think I was probably, you know, one over through five, and then just started, you know, just started compounding errors. I think I made one birdie. I had, you know, my eyes got big on 12 and
yeah,
doubled that. And I was like, all right, I'm, you know, I'm like, this place is making a fool out of me right now.
I shot 81, and I had it going too on the front until I doubled eight. Just bogey, double bogey, you know, 7, 8, 9. It doesn't really beat you up. It just kind of puts you in, it's like pressure points. It's like it's you
it
know,
feels like
put a, you, it's decommissioning you. Like you don't even realize, like, oh my God, you got me like in an awkward spot. Now you're gonna kill me.
What's like the, it's like a flyweight boxing match to where like neither guy can like.
Yeah, no one's getting knocked out.
Like nobody has the power to knock anybody out. But it's just these very technical rounds of back and forth, and you're just trying to score points, and you're trying to set up the next combination and everything. And it's very technical, cerebral golf course in that regard.
And you're not really, you know, other than maybe 7 and 8, you're not really losing a ball out there, right? Like,
yeah, no, that. I don't. I think I played the same ball all day.
Yeah, I hit one OB on 8, which is the only reason I mentioned it. So I did lose a ball, but I didn't feel, that was an unforced error because I was hitting driver.
Did you hit one in the cemetery? Right?
I think I did, yeah. Up right of the green.
Yeah.
Yeah. So hate that. Hate doing that. I was trying to send it. So anyway, shout out to Springfield Country Club and Springfield, Ohio, and you know, our grandpa, Gene Kunk. Rest in peace.
Yeah. Love it. Good stuff. Good to get back there, and at some point we need to do an event or something there.